Welcome back to Everyday Innovation. Today, I'm excited to be joined by former college and pro football player, coach, mentor, leadership facilitator, consultant, author, and now content creator with his own podcast, Masterfully Using Mindset as Strategy to Win the Game of Life. I feel like advise each other on so many things. So I'm so excited to have you here in this capacity today. We can talk about not just what you're working on, but just your background and all the things that you've been learning and chat with you and dig in about mindset and kind of that mind-body connection too. So I have a couple of warm-up questions. Are you ready?
I am.
Awesome. So I like to ask this to every creator, creatorpreneur. What are you learning right now? Or what are you reading? What are you digging into?
What am I learning and reading? Wow. So I'll start off with the latter. So what I'm reading is I usually read a couple of books at the same time. One is by this author most of us have heard of by Napoleon Hill. This particular book is You Can Perform Your Own Miracles. And it's to me as powerful as Think and Grow Rich.
Is Outwitting the Devil Napoleon Hill too?
Yes.
Yeah. So I haven't read it. So what drew you to that book?
It's a couple of things. I mean, to me, it's very much like Think and Grow Rich. The chapter on struggle to me is it's awesome because I think that's not something we talk a lot about here in our country or in the world. But I think in order for anyone who's been successful or anyone who has started a business or anything in life, it goes like this. It goes up and down. And typically the low point is where you get the ideas to go up to the high point.
And exactly.
Yeah. The person I always use as an example is the late Steve Jobs. You know, he got fired from a company he started. And because he got fired and went to Pixar, he learned some technology and he learned about a few things. So when he came back to Apple, he was able to relaunch Apple into what it is now. So
That is so, it's so poignant. And I think a lot of people like to talk about inherently a challenge and a difficult thing, but we do learn a lot from it, or especially like in these times right now where there's maybe uncertainty economically, politically, any of that, right? It doesn't seem like it's a good time to innovate or to create, but it's actually one of the best times because you're learning a lot, you're sharpening, you know, certain skills, you're seeing more raw, vulnerable human emotion. It's a time where if you're able to kind of ride the highs and celebrate them when you can, but take the lows and use them for, like you said, that inspiration. I mean, you kind of start to find your seasonal way of creating impact in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And you figure out who you are and what your true values are at the core of who you really are. And you also tend to find out like who's in your circle. And who will stay in your circle, and who will leave your circle, and who you will invite to your inner circle. So, to me, it's a great opportunity to figure out how to operate on a continual basis.
I love that. And what else are you reading, or what else are you learning about right now?
Cues. It's a book by Vanessa Van Edwards.
Oh, talks
about body language and nonverbal communication, which to me is the key to communication in general.
I love. So what's something that you've learned recently, maybe that you didn't before, or anything that you've kind of discovered or rediscovered?
Because I studied communication in college, it reaffirmed what I already knew. However, in the world in which we live now with social media, there's so much information flying at us and to us and through us that it's really important to understand sometimes when we receive information or a message, we are interpreting it in the way that we experience it versus the person who sent the message. So I think that happens a lot. But I also think body language, when you're not in the presence of someone, sometimes for me, I know I'd much rather be in person if possible, but I pick up on people's energy. I pick up on people's nonverbal communication, because to me, the nonverbal affirms what's the verbal is actually saying.
That makes so much sense. And it's so true. And I think it's a source of a lot of miscommunication too. And sometimes it is true. Sometimes you just need to get in the room with somebody or at least hold some sort of intimate space with them online, whatever that might be, so they can kind of be in that energy. And I think it's also really why it's so important for your own energy management too, when you're, even if you're posting or you're in a meeting, whatever that might be, to make sure you can self-regulate or whatever you need to do to get into the space that you would like to convey. Cause that's always tough when your energy is not matching, you know, what your intention is. And then what happens is that can be confusing to somebody else who you're trying to create a relationship with, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah, totally. Energy to me, I sometimes I work with young people and I say, your energy shows up before you do. Mm. So what you just said basically is check yourself. I mean,
this check yourself before you wreck yourself.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, Daniel Goleman talks about this in EQ, you know, emotional intelligence. I mean, understanding how to manage your emotions, how to navigate all those type things. So in the world in which we live now, I think it's paramount because human to human connection is needed more than ever before.
Yeah.
Because of what's happening in society right now.
Absolutely. And I think I was just talking to somebody last night about this, especially during, you know, the pandemic or any sort of lockdowns. I feel like there was a little bit of a loss in that practice. It is a practice. It's not just something we innately, we have to be in commune with other people and practice those social skills, those energetic self-regulation, all of those things. And I think a lot of us got a little bit out of practice. And what happens is it becomes awkward. It's amazing how much that affected our social life beyond just like our health and, you know, mental wellness, of course, being inside, but that social wellness was really, really impacted by that.
Yeah. So you know what I do? The month of December, I spent a lot of time traveling back and forth to New York, into the city, and then also to Long Island. Mm-hmm. So I would do this thing, what I call a social experiment.
Oh, and I love social experiments.
So I fly into the airport. Typically, I was flying into JFK and I was departing out of LaGuardia. And something as simple as just walking through the airport and smiling at someone, and seeing if they smile back or if they give you an acknowledgement back. 8 out of 10 times, the person would smile back. So it just proved to me that it actually is very important. It's super important that we continue to pay attention to our energy and how we interact with others.
I feel like a lot of people don't feel like they have that kind of an impact, and they really do. Like, just a few kind words seriously can change the trajectory of someone's day. If they're going to go after a business venture, I mean, there have been times where I really doubted myself, and having somebody just say, you know what, that sounds amazing, or you've got this, or you know what I mean? Like, that sounds like a great fit. You know what I mean? And it's that, not that you want to seek that validation, but it does really help. And it's a wonderful added bonus to someone's life to be able to share that with them.
Well, I could give you a great example. We're in January.
Yeah.
You know, the big game just happened with Michigan and Washington, but then the NFL playoff games are happening. And last night, the Kansas City Chiefs playing in frigid cold weather, I think it was the fourth coldest game of all time.
Yep.
Against the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah. I was like, uh-oh, Chiefs and Dolphins, we're meeting again today. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But you know, the fact that the Dolphins are a warm weather team, they're super fast. You know, they have a lot of speed in all of their throughout their team. And yet last night, they just never could really get it going. And I think the weather had an impact. I mean, the weather had an impact on both teams, but after the game, you know, a couple of the players were like, we just went out with the right attitude. And these were the Chiefs players. And they said, we were going to put forth our best effort. And the weather was the weather. We can't control the weather. So let's just go out and play in the weather.
Yeah. No, that totally makes that totally, totally makes sense. And it really is about that mindset. Well, I have a fun little exercise for us. This is my bit of spontaneity for the, there's lots of spontaneity in a podcast, but this is just kind of fun. I pre-selected a few questions. They're on 4 cards. I'm shuffling them now. Okay. And I thought it could be something that could get us to dive in. Okay. This is a good one because I actually see you doing lots of things on social media that might answer this, but what practices help keep you grounded?
Yoga, exercise, communicating with people. I actually love engaging with people. So for me, the movement piece, whether it's yoga or whether it's exercise, is a big part of that. Prayer, that's a big part of what it is that I do. So to me, prayer is, you know, it's about having that direct communication with your Lord.
Yeah.
And to me, there's an aspect to it that's almost a meditative state.
It is.
You really focus.
Yeah. So it's like mind, body, social, spiritual.
Mind, body,
soul. I love
soul.
That.
Mind, body, soul.
Mind, body, soul.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you're focused on? Because I see like you're doing different challenges in yoga or mobility, or I think I've seen even push-ups too. What are like your favorite things that you're focusing on in this moment?
Push-ups for me, you don't need to go to a gym. You can do push-ups anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's a representation of some people it's really difficult for and some people it's easy for. Depending on the quantity, you can make it more challenging for someone who's really good at push-ups. So I look at push-ups as a great way to develop consistency and to do one thing that might be hard throughout your day. So I'm in a practice of doing, typically I do 100 a day. That's what I typically do. If I miss one day, I might double up and do 200. So that's just how I roll, but it's all about movement and teaching my body that I'm in control of what's going on. So if I'm sore or tired or whatever, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's about getting it done because that's the focus and that's the discipline and that's the commitment.
And you're building that trust with yourself and you develop such an amazing sense of confidence when you have that you're not breaking those promises to yourself. And you're, like you said, you have that control over something very, very positive in your life that is helping you shape your development. And like you said, it's a test of strength at some point. So especially if you have, I feel like we have these hard days that we go through, like you said, the ups and downs, right? So if you have that moment where you can practice being strong for a moment, whether it's that, or I know a lot of people do like the cold plunges or they do something in there to create a little bit of healthy resistance, healthy stress. I mean, that's why I think working out, you know, doing some sort of a movement where you get to push yourself a little bit and build some strength is so important for confidence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And typically when I was traveling back and forth in New York, that's when I would do the cold shower. So I'd wake up early in the morning, do my workout, do my cold shower, and then do the workshop. So that was my routine. And typically I was eating like once, maybe twice a day.
Okay, so you were doing a little bit of fasting along with that as well.
Yeah, it's built in for me. It's just my typical built in as to how I operate.
Yeah.
And to me, if you think about the wintertime, you know, we just had a big snowfall, a big, dense, heavy snow.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, I don't think I ate yesterday. So I literally did not eat. And it wasn't intentional. It was unintentional, but I tend to eat intuitively. I eat when I'm hungry and wasn't hungry.
I feel like you also have developed such an amazing mind body connection. I feel like that started probably very early for you. If you all don't already know, this person right here was a fantastic college and pro football player. So point being is, you kind of like got that drilled in early, this kind of idea of my, like, I just am always so fascinated about this like mind body connection and learning this like strategic frameworks already at that age, right? Like you're learning that in football. And I want to talk to you about that because I was like, I feel like that lays such a beautiful foundation for the way that you coach and mentor other people. So tell me a little bit about like, what drew you into football and like, how did that kind of start to lay the foundation for a lot of what you do now?
So here's what I would say. I would say I was a terrific college football player. My pro career was short-lived primarily because of an injury. So
it happens.
That happens. Yeah, that's part of the game. And but it taught me a lot. It taught me how to deal with struggle because I actually ruptured my Achilles tendon while in college.
I've heard that that's one of the worst injuries of the football game. I don't know if that's like true, but anytime I hear about an Achilles, that's a really rough run to recover from.
Well, in my particular case and the time frame that it happened, you know, it was a long time ago, so we didn't have the technology that we have now. So I was in a cast pretty much 4 or 5 months. I mean, it happened in September. I really didn't start running again until April, which is a long time. So lots of things happened over that period of time where I had to relearn how to run. I had to build strength back up. I had to build balance back up, all those type things, and as well as my confidence. So I went through, I wouldn't say the mental part was really, really hard, but it was. But what made it easier was having your teammates and having other people around you. So that's, to me, one of the biggest things I learned from that, the lesson that I learned, is when you're on crutches and you're in a dining hall, how do you get your tray to the table? I mean, something as simple as that. That means you need help. Here's this guy who's never had an injury before, who's physically capable, needing help from others. Yeah. So it taught me how to ask for help, which sometimes is really difficult for me, you know.
I think for anyone, but I could imagine, especially like if you're a football player at an amazing school and you're on top of the world and something happens, and then, but that's such a testament to how important like community is and building those relationships and the importance of the team and like why you're there in the first place and how you play together. You can take that into any situation, and the health of that team, the health of your community. I mean, it's amazing to have that. A lot of people don't have that safety of feeling that they can lean on other people. And that's, you know, creates this hyper independence that can be very lonely.
To me, you learn, it's all about understanding your role, your responsibility. And if you think about a football team, we have a coach, we have a head coach, and then there's several individual coaches, and then there's a strength coach. And if you want to be really good, you have to be coachable. Learning how to be coachable is a skill. There are a lot of people who aren't coachable. They don't listen. They don't pay attention. But going back to your original question, though, so me playing in the neighborhood is really what led me to playing football. I wasn't very good at football when I played in like fifth grade. I was horrible. As a matter of fact, I remember the story when there was a game. I actually didn't get into the game. So nobody was looking at me, and I looked around. I put my hands in the dirt and I rubbed it all over my pants because my uniform was white as could be.
So you're like, look, I want to look like, I'm in this game, whether I'm in this game or not, I'm in this game. Even if it's just, I'm visualizing my, you know, my role, and I'm here and I got my knees dirty just like everybody else. I love that.
Right. Yeah. So, but I played a lot in the neighborhood. I played with other people. I played a lot of basketball. So basketball for me was probably the sport that I loved the most. I was better at football, but I was a really good athlete. And I would call myself like affectionately, I'd probably call myself like a nerdy athlete who was just really good at the physical component of those types of things that God blessed me with some natural ability.
Yeah.
As far as the studying piece, it started to come later on, like when I got, you move up to the next level. So going to college, I was a quarterback in high school. So going up to the level of playing in college and switching positions to a receiver.
Yeah.
That required a lot of study. Not that I didn't study in high school, but it was just different.
Because I feel like college football and like pro football are very different in the way that they, I mean, I'm not saying super different, but they are different in the way they operate. What was kind of your take on that? Like just like your role when you were in.
Big difference is this, all about the mindset, learning the plays, knowing the plays so well that where if there is a mistake, if the quarterback calls out a play, you need to know your position so well that you can compensate for somebody telling you the wrong play or something along those lines. But the speed of the game is so much faster at the pro level than at the college level.
Yeah.
And everyone on that field can play. Not that it's not in college, it's just the speed as to which players react. And I don't know if people know this. Now with film that we have, you can study. We study plays. We study the other opponent. and you know what they're going to do. So sometimes you do things in practice or in a game to, like, you know, as a wide receiver, I might line up and I might go like this with my hands, and the DB is going to be, oh, it's a pass play. And actually, it might be a running play. So I'm doing it on purpose to kind of throw
them off a little bit.
Yeah. So it's a lot of psychological games, but the mental piece, that's the big difference between the pro game and the college game. The athleticism at the pro level is across the board. It's unbelievable. I mean, someone like Joe Flacco, who is an unbelievable talent, but I think he's like 42 years old. I mean, he's still performing at a high level. He didn't perform very well yesterday against the Houston Texans. Mm-hmm. Threw two interceptions in a row. But
so my husband is a big Cleveland Browns fan. So we both had a day yesterday. I'm just kidding. I mean, it's impressive. Like at the, you know, you're starting to see a little bit more of that too. I feel like even in basketball and everything too, you're seeing some of these athletes. It's not just like the retire at young ages anymore. It's like you're getting these more mature players, you know, that are.
I would say you're getting the more mature player at a position where they're protected a bit more because it's quarterback. So Tom Brady can do what he did because he's protected. And Tom Brady was an elite talent. So don't get me wrong there. The difference, like a Flacco compared to a Deshaun Watson, is the experience.
Yeah.
Flacco's won a Super Bowl. You know, he's had a number of games in. And if he throws two interceptions, he's going to come back and throw two or three more touchdown passes. And that's exactly what happened in a game. So he didn't get down on himself, which is the mental piece again.
And that's, it becomes, I don't think it becomes necessarily easier for everybody with age, but I do think over time, over experience and mastering yourself a bit more, you start to get more of that even keel. You can kind of ride the middle of the waves. You don't get too high, you don't get too low anymore. You're not leaning in so hard on each side, knowing that you need to sustain your focus and sustain your power by kind of riding through kind of the middle areas of it, because, you know, it can take you all over the place if you're just following your emotions every which way.
Well, I mean, you see that if you look at high schools and you look at young people.
Yeah.
That part of their brain is developed, their emotions. So they go boom and they go boom.
Yeah. And they're still working on that executive function, right? They're still working on that.
Typically what happens, if you think about young men who play football, I mean, all of a sudden you graduate at 23, 24 years old. I mean, there's a difference in your body at 27 years old, just the physical strength that a man will have compared to a 22-year-old, especially with football. Basketball a little differently. And that's why, you know, some people like a Kobe Bryant and the Kevin Garnett went from high school to the pros.
Right.
I don't know if you're going to ever see that at the professional football level, because it's just a huge difference.
Yeah.
And
that's slower build physically, or maybe just what's needed and that maturity. It's like, does it take a little bit longer? Not necessarily.
I think it varies on each individual, you know? Yeah. So I think it varies. And I think that's what makes it so difficult. Like when you think about the NFL, it's difficult to see if that person who you're about to draft, if that person is going to pan out and do well, because there's so many components that come in. There are individuals who athletic qualities were off the charts, but then they didn't have the work ethic. Johnny Manziel. Manziel in college, I don't know if you watched the special, but we learned about a couple of things with that young man in college that had a phenomenal college career. But then he didn't have the work ethic when he got to the Cleveland Browns. He never studied the playbook. He didn't do the things that's necessary at that level. Yeah. You can get away with it at the college level. You can get, maybe. But at the pro level?
No. Yeah, you're working with, like, everybody is
professional
at that point. Like, you can be an amazing player probably in college too. And maybe you're not going to be in some of the top spots, but you're supporting the team and you can probably get away with some things.
I would probably call it the level of professionalism. I mean, the level of the game just goes up.
Yeah.
And think about the coaching aspect of it. It's elite. You go up to the next level. You know, we just had Nick Saban, who just retired. He won X number of championships because on his staff, he had a level of coaching that was superior to others, as well as the talent. So that will make a huge distance between, you and other teams.
Well, and speaking of actually like the coaching aspect, like I'm sure that you learned a lot when you were in both of these spaces, and then you ended up going back, correct, to the University of Maryland, and then you were doing a lot in the mentoring and coaching space in different aspects. How did that kind of like, what did you learn maybe from some of your coaches that you kind of took into that next level? And now that you were working with young people when you had been in their kind of spot before in college, right?
Big thing to me, and I think this is something that's missing in our world, is just listening. So we got two ears for a reason. Listen more, talk less, and people will tell you what's happening with them. So in the position that I had, I called it like, I affectionately called it life after sports, but essentially my role was to help the students transition from that college to, you know, graduation, matriculating from that college onto their professional life. So I did a lot of career fairs and things of that nature. And I really loved that part of my job because my own college experience was filled with that as well. I wasn't the guy that hung out with other football players. I was doing other things across campus. I was involved in other aspects of campus because to me, the commonality between a job, trying to get a job or anything like that, is the people. So if you live with other people, you can figure out, You can get mentored by someone, which is really important. And then you can also, learn like what a job entails. So, networking, communicating, all comes from other people.
Right.
So that's something that I tried to impart to the other students when I was in that position.
I remember even, because I went to University of Miami, they did a really great job of making sure that everyone was going through all their classes and were actually very, very involved in what they were doing. They had amazing tutors. They had people in the classes to make sure that they could manage their schedules and make sure that they were involved in other activities on campus, because they're like, no, you are not just doing football. You're doing something else as well. So we actually had a lot in the business school, and it was so fun to be with them and like watch them learn a lot more about their personal brand and like things like, even if they knew that they felt like they were going to go pro and they were, or they're like, they're feeling hot that day. They're like, yeah, I think I'm definitely going to be drafted or whatever. They're like, okay, well, let's talk about what that means. And let's talk about your business going forward. So I'm so glad that you were able to kind of impart that, you know, on the students as well. So when they're kind of going through this, you're prepping them for those next stages. Are you talking to them about career options? Were you talking about football options too? Or like what kinds of things were you throwing into the mix? A little bit of everything? Or
yeah, I mean, I didn't have to talk about football, to be honest with you. I mean, I didn't. The what's interesting to me, having been a football player, and then football players tend to think they're all going to the next level. And I don't know if people understand the statistics. I mean, typically only 1% make it or go to the next level. So it's a really, really small number. And when you think about the number of athletes on any college campus, I mean, it's only like 400 to 700 student athletes. And if you're at a school like, let's say Miami, you're at 10 to 20,000 undergraduate students. I mean, that's a athletes a really, really small percentage. Yeah. So I would talk to them about the transitional phases of things and the next step of things. And some listened and some didn't. One of the biggest challenges for athletes is always having a coach telling you what to do. I think need autonomy so that they can own their own choices. Their own decision, their own choices.
Because
so I kind of looked at it as, I just looked at it as, I'm not going to tell you what to do. You need to choose what you're doing, because you're not, I don't want you to come back to me and say, hey, Ziz, you told me to do da 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 da. And I'm like, nope, I didn't tell you to do that. I told you to deliberate and think about this, this, and that. And then you make the choice. It's no different than a parent telling their child to go to this particular college. And that child goes to that college and things don't work out. Then that child is mad at their parent. Autonomy is really important. And I think that because it builds confidence. When you make a choice, you're making that choice based on factors and qualities that your criteria of whatever it is that you're choosing to go to that particular college. Like my dad, for instance, didn't want me to go to the University of Maryland, but I went anyway. Yeah. It was my choice. So I think it's important for young people to learn, you know, learn how to make decisions for themselves.
That's a really important skill as they're, like you said, going through a transition, because sometimes it's not easy to make a decision. Decision-making is hard at any level. It's hard to commit and close off other paths and to also own it, to be accountable for that. And then also be open to, if you made the wrong decision, that depending on what it is, you might be able to rectify it or pivot or do whatever you need to do. And that can be scary for people as well to say, oh my gosh, I could make the wrong decision and then have to switch to something else. But that's life. We all make decisions. Even if it sounds like the best decision in the world, things happen. And it's like, you know what? Maybe I need to rethink something I closed off before, but you have to make that decision at some point, right?
Yeah.
When you were in college to becoming a mentor, what was that transition like for you? And what do you really enjoy like mentoring and working on with people? Like, where do you feel called to do that?
So I think because of my experience, I have a pretty wide range, and I'm also a parent. So I'm a parent of three. Yeah. And what I've learned as being a parent, or whether or not I was mentoring, is like you have to take yourself out of the equation and make sure you're listening to what's being said by the student in front of you, or your child in front of you, or whomever you're mentoring, because that's what's really important. It's not about me. Like there are students that I've mentored that they've had no idea I even played sports.
Yeah,
because that's not what's important. What's important is me making that connection, having that engagement and listening. And then what I love is just supporting them and cheering for them and saying to them like, yeah, it's possible. Here's something to think about. You know, here's something you're really good at, but do you need this skill as well? You know, so I ask thought-provoking questions to get them to think about what is it that is needed. So that way they own the decision when they make it. But then I also have practice with that being a parent as well. So when you do it at the parent level, because you have three children, so it's the only decision I probably said for my boys, because I have two boys and a girl, is I didn't really want them to play football, and I kind of discouraged them. But if they really wanted to play, I would have clearly let them play.
You of course want the parent that will listen, that will problem solve with you, not the one that's just going to be authoritative and making all the decisions for you. Because the point is, if you can make those decisions earlier, then you're going to be much more self-sufficient when you don't have your parents around all the time, right? Going to college, even just going to high school, making those few little decisions during your day, practicing all of that. And that's the best education you can really give kids like that. But that's amazing. And I think you touched on something so important, which is learning how to ask quality questions is so important. I think that's a skill as a mentor that's so important, or as a coach, anything where you are developing people and you're letting people come to their own conclusions, asking the right questions is so important. And it teaches the person to ask themselves better questions. I know for me, whenever I solve a problem, I just have to ask myself lots of good questions.
Right. Exactly. So I look at social media as a great opportunity to do that. And this thing called AI, you know, this artificial intelligence thing.
Yes.
To me, if you really think about it, the better the prompt, the better the response.
Yep.
Well, I look at it as when it first came out over a year ago, you know, to the general public, people like in education was like, oh my God, it's going to disrupt this and disrupt that. And I'm like, yeah, but it's also going to encourage students or anyone who's using it to ask better questions.
Mm-hmm.
So the better question you ask, the better the response. So to me, it's all about thinking. So that's what I love about sports, because it's fluid, it's dynamic. You had and it had to be pretty quick. So you couldn't, if I dropped the pass, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I dropped a pass. You had the next play. You couldn't wallow, because if you stayed in that emotion, if you stayed in that energy,
you're going to keep dropping the next
exactly
piece.
Exactly.
And that's such a good life lesson too, because how many decisions have we made that we wallow over, or especially the things that happen to us that we have no control over? And like, why am I wallowing over that? I just missed out on 3 new opportunities in the last day because I sat. And yes, we need to process our emotions, things like that. But I mean, there are certain times where I think we just over ruminate and overthink things. And that's also been something really cool about AI too, or social media, is sometimes, you know, it gets us out of our head. We can start to ask a question elsewhere, or let's draft this out instead of me overthinking it for 6 days. Let me just see if I just collaborate with somebody else. Let's get on a call, or let me give this prompt to the AI and let's just see what comes back. And guess what? Even if you need to do still 50% of the work, you know, 20%, whatever that is, you're still a couple steps ahead and you haven't sat there and overthought or overwrought something. And I love that analogy for sports, because it's like, you can't afford to sit there and overthink. And I think it's true in life too. It's really not worth it. You're not going to be 80 and wish that you had thought about something more, you know?
Well, here's the beauty of a team sport. You know, so the difference between a tennis player or a golfer is on your team, you got someone else that might come over and says, hey, that's okay. You got the next one.
Yeah.
So you have that opportunity. Whereas in golf, it's just you and the hitting the ball.
I used to be on the golf team, and yeah, there was a little bit of support, but I mean, that is just, it's purely mental, and it's very hard on your, it's very hard individually, because it is just so down to like, you could just feel a little, someone could say something to you that was a little off and they would mess with you, right? Of course, they want to mess with you, the other team. I mean, never anything really malicious, but just a little like, are you sure you counted that right? And I wish I'd played more team sports, because it is so important to have that, because you have that empathy for one another, because right. You'll all drop the ball at some point. It happens.
Exactly.
And to have somebody, I mean, that's amazing that somebody would come over and just be like, it's all right. Next one, whatever, no big deal.
Right, that's the beauty of it. And that's one of the main differences between like a team sport and an individual sport. So, and your coach is nearby. So, I mean, that's, to me, sports teaches so many life lessons. And there are lots of players who go on and take those lessons to the next level when they transition. I do think sometimes players have a difficult time transitioning from the NFL life to the next phase of their life, because they're so immersed in their sport.
It's like working in a very specialized job too. If you were very niche and you were operating at like a level of excellence that requires that sort of specialization, and you're specialized in your position, you're essentially an expert. So it's like taking an expert and plucking them out of their expert job, and they're like, let's learn something new. And you want to pull the threads of whatever, all of the more meta lessons that you've learned, but sometimes that can be really difficult, especially if you have felt that maybe you have a certain level of autonomy in your space, right? But then with other things, big decisions and more, what we call like more general decisions, that was up to your coach. That was up to like the whole team, you know? So I would imagine that transition, either from out of college or out of pro, could be really, you know, could be really difficult. And what resources are there many resources out there? Is that you? How do people transition?
That was part of my job when I worked at the University of Maryland. And there are departments within athletic departments that do that. And it's still challenging. Yeah. And I think it's challenging for some other reasons. It's simple, yet it's complex. You know, so it's not, it's probably not the best conversation to have right now. But the thing that I would say is transition happens all the time in life. Yeah. We're always going through different phases. And I think sometimes we all could do a better job of saying to our child or to someone else, hey, you know what? That was really difficult for me to go through this. I know I talked about my injury to people and I told them, all of a sudden I'm a part of a team. Now I'm no longer a part of a team. I'm not going to practice. I'm not doing anything. I'm not involved. So you go to being an integral member of a team to not being involved at all. That's that's a big, that's a stark difference. But my mindset basically was, hey, I have an opportunity to go hang out on campus, do experiments.
Really build another team, right? Maybe it's not a team that you're playing with, but it's a team that you're collaborating with in some other aspect, or you're just doing life with.
Exactly. You know, that's what it was for me. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did that, I know then you kind of moved into more of a consulting role. So that's like, you're almost taking that coaching level to like, now it's, you're doing it professionally, but you're doing it in a way that's mentoring, but then you're taking that to the level of strategy. How did you kind of build upon that? You know, I know even recently you were doing diversity and inclusion.
You know, I've owned my own company at one point. I've done a lot of different types of things.
Yeah.
And I'm a voracious reader. So I tend to look at, I don't look at things in isolation. I'll be like, okay, how does this impact, or how could this be somewhere else or in a different environment? Yeah. So that has helped me to understand what happens at a company level and what happens in a small organization of 500 employees or a larger organization where there's thousands. It's to me, it's fun. It's fun. It's like a puzzle.
It's humans, right? Like you like working with humans and connecting humans. So it's humans, even if it's 2 people, 100 people, if it's a company, if it's a, you know, a school, whatever that might be. Yeah, you do really thread a lot of that together. And how did you kind of, are you putting strategy frameworks behind some of the mentorship and coaching with a lot of these companies? What are they wanting to learn? What are you bringing to them that you're bringing in these aspects of that mentoring, the sports, the coaching, the mindset? What are you bringing to them and presenting as strategy for their employees? What does that look like for you?
I kind of look at it as this. Sometimes companies don't gel and they have to figure out how to mesh. So what's the human component of all of that? If you have a boss, I'm not even going to use the word boss. I don't really like the word boss. If you have a leader, because to me, as soon as you use that word leader, there's a responsibility on that leader's part to take care of those individuals in your care. That's not my definition. That's Simon Sinek, who I love the work that he does.
Yes.
But I, to me, it's about that. That's why even if you think about, to me, and this might be a little controversial, so I'll say it. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. As soon as people hear that word, they're like, ah, I don't want to hear that. That's this, that's that. I think it's actually leadership development. If you're the CEO or if you're a C-suite executive, it's your responsibility to make sure that your employees belong in your company.
Yeah.
Because that's really, if they don't belong, you got a problem.
Yeah. And the thing is, it comes from even just a strategic standpoint. You are working with humans. You are working, the part of the value of your company is the talent that you have.
Exactly.
And how are you going to innovate with everybody believes the same thing, looks the same way, comes from the same background? What kind of ideas are going to come from
it? It's just different. So in order to understand where they're coming from, you need to have some empathy and listen. And when you do that, you're like, okay, I see what they're saying. So we can help facilitate that. So to me, the listening skill is what's really missing in our society right now and really in our world. If you can foster that particular skill, I think you eliminate a lot of challenges that we have. And then going back to the piece and the book that I was talking about called Cues by Vanessa Van Edwards, nonverbal communication. If you say something to someone and they look like they're not buying it, then that means you need to spend a little more time on sharing whatever it is that you're talking about. And maybe because they do that, they have that expression and you have enough self-awareness to recognize, maybe I'm not explaining it well, or maybe I'm missing something. And because you notice that, they're able to share with you, hey, here's a better way of doing XYZ. So many different things can happen, but it goes back to communication, nonverbal communication, listening, and leadership. So I wouldn't call diversity, equity, and inclusion what it's called. I would call it leadership development, because I think, especially now, And the direction we're headed, I mean, we need to call it something else because people don't think it's necessary, but it's clearly still necessary. And if you look,
it's clearly still necessary. And it's and naming it something, it's more for like a headline or more for just a talking point than really what it is, which is just paying attention to your people, being a better facilitator. Right. We were talking about facilitation, listening as a facilitator, but what else in that skill do you really enjoy? Because I know you were telling me, you started telling me a little bit of a story how people were kind of getting off topic and getting off, you know, the rails on something and being able to harness that energy and bring it back together. What is that in facilitation? What is that managing of energy?
I think curiosity to me is what has kept me out of judgment. And that's what's helped me be a better parent, mentor, all of those things. Because when you lead with curiosity, you're just naturally curious. And you're like, okay, I didn't see that
coming. Tell me more.
How did that work for you? And people feel the connection versus, oh my God, I can't believe you did that, which sounds like judgment. And once you do that, then boom, you're butting heads. So facilitation is definitely artwork. And I'm very intuitive in how I work in general. Mm-hmm. And I like to set the stage ahead of time without any expectations. So I throw things out. You have to know how to ask the right question at the right time. So sometimes what I do is I study comedians and I see how they deliver. I see how they deliver a story. It's not necessarily about the joke. I'm like, how do they story tell? How do they say it? What is the emphasis? And it goes back to the book I'm reading as well. How you stand with someone impacts that other person.
Yeah.
Whether you have engagement, you have to know and understand someone else's culture. If they're from another culture that doesn't want you to look them in the eye or you don't touch them, you have to, you know, when you know those types of things and you do that with someone, they're like, oh, wow. They respect you. They start to trust you because that's what you're trying to do is you're trying to engage and build trust. Because if you don't have the trust, the engagement won't be there. And consequently, you won't be able to do what it is that you're trying to do, which is, as human beings, hard work.
Gather to solve a problem, whatever that might be, some sort of collaboration, have a fruitful discussion. You know, meetings everywhere are pretty much broken. People are trying to kind of put them back together, but they're not getting the same sort of impact. And they have such a bad rap now because they're not well facilitated. You know, it really is about how can we start to, like you said, intentionally set the space, start to talk about storytelling, have a little bit more empathy for everyone sitting there instead of seeing just a room full of faces as one entity, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
And then what I've also found really inspiring about you too is you've kind of even taken that to the next level and you're putting your knowledge into new spaces. So you've written a book. Come to decide to write a book. Was there someone who mentioned it to you? Was it something that you've always wanted to do? Did you want to just kind of extend your impact? How did that come about?
Just I really wanted to have an impact, more of an impact on students. I continue to hear students talk about the same, they're making the same mistake. And when I think about my background as an athlete, if I'm making the same mistake, I'm not playing anymore. So it's changed something. And so that's what that was the purpose of that. I ended up with the co-author because I didn't understand the book writing process and I learned a lot. So what I try to do is if I don't know something, I ask that question. It goes back to the Achilles. If I need help, ask the question. So I reached out to someone, we ended up collaborating, and it was a great learning environment for me, knowing like writing a book is one thing, selling a book is a completely different animal. So
And it's a new way to learn about if you've been an entrepreneur in business, these kind of creative projects or these new types of ventures are really interesting because it allows you to experiment and learn a whole new way of selling, a whole new way of creating, putting something together, composing it. It's not altogether different from other places, but there are nuances to it that are really interesting. And you don't really you can kind of read about them, but until you're in it and doing it, it's hard to really know.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Putting that all together, you know, were you, when you were co-authoring, were they kind of you're pulling together pieces and you're taking a bunch of knowledge that you had from a lot of these interactions and just kind of composing something together. Is that kind of how the collaboration worked?
Yeah, it was pretty much like I pretty much had the book written. And then we went back and forth, and this particular person had some strong feelings on some information they wanted to share. And I'm like, okay, cool. So you learn how to compromise, you learn how to work with someone, you learn how to collaborate. And like you said, it was an interesting process. And I love learning, especially about something that I'm interested in. So when I'm completely engrossed in something like that, I'm like zeroed in. So I'm totally focused in on that. And sometimes what happens, because I get so zeroed in, that I miss some of the other things that's also happening. Because I have, you know, it's funny, because I don't know if I would call it perfectionistic tendencies, but it's like I want to be at a really high level. So it's like my...
Well, you have like a level, a standard of excellence that you have probably, you know, especially when you're on team sports and stuff too, you want... not just for you, but for the whole team to perform at your best. So even if it's maybe not perfection, it's your best. So if you're always striving to show up at your best in these spaces, you're like, no, I want to go all in. Like, what do you mean I'm not going to like just farm that out or contract that out? I'm part of this process. What are you talking about? Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
I play this sport called bocce. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but I
love it. Yes, yes.
I love bocce. We have 4 bocce courts in our neighborhood. So clearly, you know, when you're living in Michigan, you don't play bocce in the wintertime. You go indoors to play. And playing indoors is a completely different game because of the surface. So for me, bocce represents a new learning, a new opportunity, another way for me to compete and learn how to do something that's different. So and it requires the mental agility because you have to adjust. Yeah. And, you know, whether you roll first or you roll second or you roll third, depending on how you're playing, I love all those components to it because that's the team part. And it's like you have to know and understand your role and responsibility, and you have to do it at the highest level. And if you don't, then that means the other person can have to pick you up. So like playing team golf, you know, if tough thing about golf is the team score, of course, is how you win. But when you're playing a team sport and I drop a pass and say another play comes and another player makes a play and another player makes a play, and because those players make the play, you end up winning. It's not all about you individually. You learn how to cheer other people on.
Yeah.
You also learn your role as someone who's there, but if you don't come through, it's like, okay, what are the other things I can do to make sure that my teammates are successful?
Yeah.
So I think there's...
And how can I support them during this hard time or where they're having a bit of imposter syndrome? They make that winning play. That is just so important to be able to celebrate other people and be like, it's your celebration. You get to own that celebration too. And I feel like we don't do that enough. We don't see somebody else win and say, that's a win. Not a win for me too, in the sense of like, I'm taking credit, but it's a win for me too, because I'm like, no, this is one of my people. Hell yeah, they did that. You know what I mean? That's amazing. That's incredible that they did that. And guess what? There's plenty more to go around for me, for all of us. You know, I think there's this thought sometimes, and this is again going back to, you know, in the leadership space too, that there's just not enough for all of us.
You know what? You said something about the word imposter syndrome, which is an interesting terminology.
Oh yeah.
And it's something I started doing a little research on it. And I don't know how much you know about it, but to me, I don't complicate it. It's a limiting mindset.
Yeah.
And ultimately that's what it is to me, but I do understand like why people use that terminology. I just find that because you don't hear much about it. I mean, it's actually, the word's been around since like 1988, if I remember correctly, but as of late is when you started to hear that word. And,
come up a lot. I definitely think it's a limiting mindset. It comes from a lot of different sources. I think, you know, and it can come from your background as well. It can come from, there's a lot of people who have fear of failure, fear of success. I mean, there's like a million different things that it's all limiting beliefs that are stacked under it. At the same time, I think people should also consider that imposter syndrome also not always a negative thing. And just to kind of let go of labeling it as something, it is a limiting, it can be a limiting belief, but it's also a signal to two things. One, that you're not an imposter, because imposters don't get imposter syndrome. If you're an imposter, you're just scamming the world, right? You're just scamming. You're scamming. You're doing your thing. They're not worried if you're an imposter because, hell yeah, I'm not who I say I am. I'm just doing my thing. So, you know, the fact that you have it means that you're not an imposter. So congratulations first on that. Yes. And then second of all, imposter syndrome tends to happen when you're out of your comfort zone. So if you're out of your comfort zone, also congratulations, you're pushing yourself past something that maybe you're not used to doing, you're not super comfortable doing. That means you're growing, and that's okay. So to feel a little bit like that, I think is okay. I wouldn't sit in it. Like you said, it's a limiting belief that you have this there, but the biggest people in the world get imposter syndrome. I just saw one of the biggest fund managers say that he still gets imposter syndrome, but again, it's because they're trying to get into new territories or things that maybe they don't know 100%, or they're not 1,000% sure it's going to work out. But if it does, that could be amazing.
Totally. I mean, it's, I'll use a sports example, and it's your alma mater against my alma mater. So back in 1984, we play Miami at Miami. Miami's team is better than us across the board. If you look at the team and you're like, okay, they physically have a better team than us. Now, at halftime, the score was 31-0 Miami.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the Miami team, let's just say they definitely had a lot of characters on our team. This gentleman by the name of Michael
Always. Irving,
he was a true freshman and he wasn't even playing in that game. But he, yeah, you know, there are a lot of the characters on that team. So it's 31-0 at halftime. So this is, to me, this is the beauty of team sports, and this is the beauty of football. So halftime is a time when you can make adjustments. You make some changes. You alter your game plan because the first half didn't work the way you wanted it to. So we come back out in the second half, score a touchdown, score a touchdown, score a touchdown. Next thing you know, it's 31-21. And it's like, whoa, hold on, what's going on? And they score, we score. We end up winning 42-40. Now, we could have scored another touchdown. We were on the 2-yard line, and our coach, Bobby Ross, he took a knee, because that's the value of what he stood for, is like, you don't rub it in anyone's face. You do that. Yeah. And for us, it wasn't about they were better than us. It was, we didn't play up to our capability. Mm. And so we went back in, and that was the conversation at halftime. It wasn't a whole lot of talking. It was a lot of reflecting, but that was what it was really all about. And we were pretty close in the team, and we just didn't play to our best, and we knew we could do better. So it was just like, go out, play, have fun, and let it ride. And consequently, we end up winning. So when I think about mindset and limiting mindset or imposter syndrome, that's how I think. So I don't think, I think about mastery to me. And this is why I like thinking about, I don't think about grades. Like, there could be a student in math, completely different subject. This could be a student in math who gets A's all the time. And we're like, oh, that student's brilliant. Well, maybe, maybe not. Maybe the C student who's not very good at math, who's working a lot harder at math to get a C than that A student. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes what happens with grades is we don't see what actually is happening. So when you talk about mastery and you talk about working toward mastery, I think that puts us in a different level of conversation, so to speak, and dialogue. Yeah.
That's why I think, again, I think we're on the same page with imposter syndrome. It is a limiting belief. It's almost like you wish, it's not that you don't want people to not talk about it anymore. It's kind of like addressing it in the room and just say, hey, it's a common feeling, just like being sad is a common feeling, and just like being angry that something didn't go your way is a common feeling. It doesn't have to be this a new challenge to overcome, because I don't think you need to overcome it. I honestly think it's just a thing that comes up, and you just have to kind of manage it like you would any other emotion and just say, hey, I don't feel incredibly confident in this right now. Do you know how many people don't know what they're doing at any given moment? Most people. And that's okay. Because how are you supposed to know exactly what's going to happen? Otherwise, we'd all be billionaires. And like,
you know,
there's no fun.
You know how you're supposed to know, since you asked that question? And you think about it, like you have your podcast up and running and I'm trying to start one and launch one. And the date that I put out there was June. I don't know, June 15th. That was the date that I said I was going to do it and blah, blah, blah. And I never did it. So why did I talk to you? Because you've already been doing it. And that's how you get to where you're trying to go is you look at people above you and you leverage. That's how I look at it. Is you're leveraging their experiences, their knowledge, their systems to get to where you want to go.
Yeah. And then, of course, and then you innovate in your own way, because the thing is, I know a lot of people go out there and you know what I'm talking about. It's the people who become gurus, right? And it's amazing to learn from a lot of them, but it is also their own experience too. So having somebody, one that can mentor you in a way, but also see your unique nuances of your creation and your systems and the way that you want to move forward, that makes a great advisor. And then also having that confidence, like you said, that same autonomy in yourself, you can be coached, but you also are like, okay, well, I have some options here. I think I'm going to go with this because this feels more correct for me. And only I can make that decision. Someone can maybe guide me and show me a couple of options here that I can choose from. But really, ultimately, it's my decision. But that's such a great point. Having mentorship and being a mentor, I was actually just talking to my husband about this, just how he's seeking, you know, some mentors in a new space that he's working in. But then he's also been trying to actively see people who are newer to like recruiting to mentor them a little bit. So, and then having some peers as well that you're building alongside, you have that kind of people that you're utilizing to learn from in specific ways or in many ways, whatever that might be. Then you have your peers that you're just building alongside. You're cheering each other on. Someone might say, hey, I just found this cool new tool. Show me that. We do this a lot with each other. We like, you'll send me an article and I'll be like, oh my God, look at this thing. You know, we get to share what we're learning with one another. And then you know, we both have our own people that we advise and we mentor in our own ways. And, you know, it's really incredible to be able to do that and have that relationship with people.
Literally, 3 weeks ago, I'm getting off a plane from Edinburgh back to JFK. And a gentleman, I just walking beside him. He's got shorts on, short sleeve shirt. and it was just funny how we ended up in this conversation about to go to customs. It was just a long walk. And he said to me, so he was retired. He was probably, he had been retired probably like 6 or 7 years already. Family owned business, didn't know exactly what industry, but what he said to me was, it was really important to take the time to really interact with people and listen, because you never know who you're talking to. But if you take the time to interact with them, down the road, that person could become of value to you, or you might be able to pass on something of value to that person in the moment. And that to me was a really important point. And that was from a business standpoint. He said that's why he was so successful in his business.
Wow. I love that. And the thing is, you know what? Talking to people is such an underrated, like, I just learned so much. So we're talking right now on a podcast, and I feel like that's what you're going into next. That's what you're working on. That's your next move, right? And you're learning so much about it. But like in the end, we're just having these awesome conversations, and you get to do that. You get to create that space. What are you so excited about in this next like journey of yours for, you know, podcasting or bringing people together, bringing, you know, different voices? What are you excited about in this space? Or is it part of the process, the creation process?
Combination. Part of the creative process. But the other part is, if that information, if someone says something that can help someone else, I'm like, yay. So to me, I get to cheer them on. But then also if they share some valuable tips or information that can help someone else, that's what gets me super excited.
And what kind of inspired the podcast? Because I know I was asking that about because I know we go into these new ventures, right? And I always love to see like, where did that spark come from? We were talking about the book, but now in this space, what was it about podcasting?
So here's what's funny about this question, or the irony is, back in college, in my undergraduate days, I had a radio show. I used to interview players. And I started thinking about that. And I'm like, why am I so late to the ballgame, so to speak? Now, I will say 3 years ago, I did have a podcast with another person and we talked about education. The question was, what did it mean to be educated in the 21st century? So we did about 20 episodes.
And
you know, that was with someone else. So in this space that I'm operating from now, and it's just, I'm like, you know what? I love talking to people. I love talking to people. I love sharing information. I'm curious. I think I'm a naturally curious dude that loves engaging. And so I get to go back to my roots, so to speak, when I had a radio show when I was at the University of Maryland. And then also I was a color commentator for 2, 3, 4 years when, you know, for the University of Maryland network when I did games. So it gets me back to that space. It's been a while. I kind of forgot about it.
But you know, do you know how often that happens? You think back and you're like, you start working on a project, you're like, wait, this is totally full circle, or it's just a different, it's something in different clothing, right? Like it's kind of that a reimagined piece that you've already visited at an earlier point. It's just, it's like maybe the more mature version or the matured version that's matured along with you, and the idea is a little bit different. And it's like skills you've picked up along the way. And it's amazing. I really would encourage people who are listening to this too to think back to college or something that you really loved and see if there's some threads there that you can pull, you know, a little bit to see if there's a project or if you're considering a new venture, like, is there something that's informing this next version? Because, you know, you can really draw on that. That's great storytelling too.
Yeah. So it's, and plus it's fun. It's something different. And I like challenging myself to get out of my comfort zone at times. So it's, the technical piece, sometimes I get a little too caught up in it and I just need to like, just go out and play and just let it ride.
The technical piece comes and you find, like you said, you're so good at asking questions and finding answers. You'll figure it out. You don't have to overthink that in the beginning. A lot of people just start, you know, you don't have to do it this way, but a lot of people will just start by recording something on, you know, just their phone, or they'll record a couple of YouTube videos and then it turns into something new. And it's just, you just start doing it and you start to say, huh, what if I tried this? Or I'm curious about this now, or let me add this piece in. Yeah. So it's, I think sometimes people over-engineer the beginning of pieces like this. Yeah. Because you can see a bunch of people like, well, you got to have this many episodes to release it first. Yeah, you can. That's probably a really great strategy. But then for some people that can be incredibly overwhelming. It's better to just get going and see what happens. And you know, I mean, what an amazing journey to, you know, keep, let's say after 100 episodes, you go back to episode 2 or 3 and you're like, wow, look, I think if you're not a little bit like, oh, I hadn't been doing that part yet. I mean, you're not growing. So it's like the whole point is to just get out there, start doing it, start having the conversations, and you build your network even by interviewing people and getting to know their communities and audiences too.
And that's the other part of it is, I think, for me, creating that human connection, I think, is important. And I think that's one of the missing components of what's happening in our society and in our world. Yeah. And if I can help make that a little smaller, then I'm up for doing it.
Yeah, I love that. I have a couple closing questions because I want to respect your time. And this has been such a wonderful conversation. But this podcast is called Everyday Innovation. So there's no set definition for it. It's really kind of up to us as humans to define it for ourselves. But I'm curious, in your own way, how would you describe everyday innovation? How does it show up for you?
So sometimes I think in sports, so I'm going to give 2 different examples. So I'm going to go back to the Kansas City Chiefs playing the Miami Dolphins. Now, last year, the Kansas City Chiefs were the Super Bowl champions. And they beat teams because they typically outscored them and their offense was prolific. This year, they're winning in a different way. They don't have the same offensive firepower that they had last year. So their defense is playing at a much higher level than their offense. And their special teams is playing at a higher level. So I look at everyday innovation in general as how you operate and get in alignment with yourself. So sometimes that might be, okay, you know what? I'm going to bed a little too late. I'm going to move it up to 10 a.m. Or you know what? I'm not reading often enough in my day. I need to up my reading to 30 minutes and I need to reduce my social media engagement back 45 minutes. It's you knowing and understanding how you operate and continue to be in alignment with yourself. Because I think that's the challenge, is being in alignment. And I tend to talk about alignment rather than balance. Because when I think about balance, I think about the seesaw. You never quite get balanced. But alignment is different because those core values that you have with yourself, when you get out of alignment with yourself, you know it because things just go haywire.
So I love the concept of alignment. And I love that you're talking about the personal aspect because, again, we're all just a bunch of people working together. The Chiefs are a bunch of people working together and they have to innovate within their team to see what are all the individuals, what's the talent we have here, what are our strengths, our weaknesses. And you know what? We got the weather going. What can we do? How can we make the best out of this situation? And you know what? We know colder weather. So hopefully we have a little bit better. We can at least mentally handle this a little bit better. And we also are ready to go and do our thing, you know?
But when you say you're ready to go and do your thing, that to me is attitude. That's the attitude, having the attitude to go out and put the work in to do what it is that you say you want to do.
And so what question would you have or pose to anybody listening right now? What's something that you would want to pose? Because I like to put it in the, I know on Spotify you can share it, or I like put the question into the newsletter or somewhere else. Because I like to see if anybody responds to the question. So it's a two-way conversation.
So the big question that I've been thinking about lately is just how do we as a society better connect and engage with others, despite what might be our differences.
Yeah.
And then I can make that another part. I can add another part on it because I think what happens is we continue to focus in on like what's different. And sometimes we let the differences get in the way of what's alike.
That's a really good question. And there's a lot of probably some really good answers to that out there. So if you're listening or watching, please respond. Please put it in the comments because I want to hear that too. Because I feel like, honestly, we need that now more than ever. And we need positive solutions. We don't need, you know, negative repercussions for things right now. We need some positive places where we can connect again and see the beauty in one another as opposed to the darkness in one another that often is the same darkness that resides in us too, right? Isn't that what shadow work is all about?
Absolutely.
A lot of the things we point out are the things that maybe we need to think about for ourselves as well.
Right. Because that's why you see it. It's because it's in you and you see it in the other person.
Yeah. Oh, so true. Well, this was incredible, of course, because you're just, full of, wisdom, stories, everything. So I so appreciate you being here. I love learning from you. Where's the best place to connect with you right now? Because I know you've been like threading it up. You're on different social media. Where's a great place to connect with you right now?
I have been threading it up. I've been experimenting on Threads and just putting out some things just to experiment. So Threads or Instagram, and I'm at ZIZ87_. My website's probably...
I'll have it all in the show notes so that everyone can check it out. But just in case you're listening and you just pop on. But I always like to ask that just because so people can make sure to connect with some of your new things and get some updates on your podcast journey and anything that you've been working on, your fitness journey, right? Your push-ups. You can cheer somebody on who wants to do some more push-ups, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I joined the group and they're doing 24 for 2024. So, 24 is amazing. Relatively simple. If I'm doing 100, I'm already doing it. So it's easy.
There you go. Well, but at least you're keeping, even on your worst day, you probably could do 24,
I hope so.
I hope so, right? It was a pleasure having you here. I look forward to in the future adding your podcast into my show notes and wonderful conversation. Thank you so much, Ziz.
Thank you, Jordan. It's a pleasure to be here and have a great rest of your day.